It is now my pleasure and my privilege to introduce Ambassador Eric Goosby, the United States Global AIDS Coordinator. Many of us who know him know what a deep commitment he has to the issues faced by women and girls in the AIDS epidemic. Ambassador Goosby exemplifies the opportunities that we have now for U.S. leadership in the area of linkages between AIDS and development. And we should recognize that a lot of movement is already underway. The issues faced by women and girls have gained new prominence in the Obama administration, with both PEPFAR and the Global Health Initiative adopting a women and girls-centered approach. Ambassador Goosby has overseen this new emphasis in this new phase of PEPFAR, including a newly launched initiative on gender-based violence, and has expressed a clear willingness to work with other sectors to pursue innovative programs that address the realities that women and girls face. As Global AIDS Coordinator, Ambassador Goosby oversees the implementation of all PEPFAR programs, as well as the U.S. government's engagement with the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria. Prior to this position, Ambassador Goosby served as the CEO and Chief Medical Officer of Pangea Global AIDS Foundation and was a professor of clinical medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Ambassador Goosby played a key role in the development and implementation of HIV national treatment scale-up plans in South Africa, Rwanda, China, and Ukraine. He has over 25 years of experience with HIV/AIDS, ranging from his early years treating patients at San Francisco General Hospital to the engagement at the highest levels of U.S. policy leadership. He was the first director of the Ryan White Care Act at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and helped develop HIV/AIDS delivery systems in the United States. During the Clinton administration, he served as deputy director of the White House National AIDS Policy Office and was director of the Office of HIV/AIDS Policy at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So please join me in welcoming Ambassador Goosby.
I'd like to thank CSIS and the Global Health Policy Center for giving me an opportunity to speak to you today. It's really an honor and a pleasure to do so. I want to thank Lisa Carthy as well for her kind words. And I think Steve is doing the right thing with his child's graduation from grammar school. We are going to go through about 12, 13 slides today that attempt to really emphasize the continued acknowledgement and role that PEPFAR specifically has seen gender-based violence, gender issues, women's issues continue to present to our medical delivery system and our ability to effectively identify, test, and retain women, their children, their partners in care systems over the duration of their illness. It is clear to us that a woman-focused approach is the most effective at identification and retention issues over time, and that if we feature and target her for that entry and retention strategy, we are more likely to be successful in retaining children and family. That theme has also moved into the Global Health Initiative, which, along with Raj Shah and Tom Frieden, are coordinating the specifics of after now what is pretty much a year since its announcement. So sex refers to the biological differences, while gender describes the characteristics that a society or culture delineates as the masculine or feminine. The norms that affect access to services, the gender norms, the risk-taking and protective behaviors, the gender-based violence and access to prevention messages, all coming out of this. It's important to us that we remind ourselves that gender refers to both women and men, given that the impact of gender norms is on both. And tackling the structural drivers of the epidemic that lead to the gender inequities really have become clear to us to be the key to responding to the HIV epidemic. These are a few examples of how gender and HIV converge. These are some of the statistics that show the disproportionate vulnerability of women to this epidemic. In sub-Saharan Africa, 60% of those living with HIV are women. In the 9 countries in southern Africa most affected by HIV, the prevalence among young women 15 to 24 was on average about 3 times that than men. A review of the studies of child sexual abuse across the world reports a prevalence range from 2 to 62%. In our experience and country, it is an overwhelming issue that is largely not part of the clinical awareness of the providers in the settings that we support because of educational issues and educating the provider, the nursing staff, the medical staff, lab staff, the healthcare worker staff, all of which for years now PEPFAR has attempted to target. But the real problem has been not having a system to respond to problems identified. So the impetus or pressure on a provider to identify a problem that they can't really respond to is low. But now we are trying to increase our ability to create services and a meaningful response that will allow us to expect and monitor and document our providers in their awareness, number one, but just as importantly, in their ability to respond and demonstrate that they indeed have responded. The Global Health Initiative really is something that we have all thought about, and after the announcement last May, really had to put on what was a very general kind of 60,000-foot description, $63 billion over 6 years, expanding in services, integrating, doing the right thing, into some very specific descriptions of how the vertical programs that are in the United States government to date, how these programs can actually increase and enhance our ability to respond to the needs of the patients, people in front of us, who we are already interfaced with in any given vertical program. One of the larger platforms is the HIV/AIDS medical platform that has been put in place through the PEPFAR effort and before. And then maternal and child health family planning platforms are probably your second largest platforms. And what I mean by medical platform is the bricks and mortar, but the human resources, the doctors, the nurses, the health workers, the lab techs, the healthcare worker aspects for outreach, how they relate to the community or don't, how they are linked to other services within the community, TB, family planning, maternal and child health. The Global Health Initiative, from our PEPFAR perspective, is an expansion of the service constellations that the patients we're already caring for in an HIV/AIDS context now need to access. So from our perspective, it's somewhat of a no-brainer to say that we will increase the services available to the patients that we are currently interfaced with by a Global Health Initiative approach. What it will basically be is an ability to take funding, resources, services that are now in a vertical funding line for maternal and child health, family planning, HIV/AIDS, let's say, have those resources aggregate above the level of the HIV/AIDS platform site, a PEPFAR site, or a maternal and child health site, so the HIV/AIDS can either create or link to or refer, but preferably create the capability to do maternal and child health, kid immunizations, and family planning services from an HIV/AIDS platform, for the maternal and child health platform to do testing for HIV, diagnose, stage, and perhaps even initiate treatment in some of the maternal child health family planning combined platforms, to move toward creating a one-stop shop idea where possible, but everywhere an ability to link, refer in a meaningful way with transportation and childcare issues as part of that package of referral. It is going to increase the number of populations that we, from an HIV perspective, now will newly interface with that we currently do not. So the number of individuals who will have access to testing, the number of HIV positives that we find, the number of high-risk individuals who are negative but are participating in high risk that we now identify for continued and repetitive prevention messaging is going to go up. And I think that it is only going to be a good thing. In terms of looking at resource movement, the fact that we are building off of already existing program platforms puts most of the resources in the $63 billion over 6 years going toward continuing those vertical programs, but now having resources to make the linkages real is really what the GHI is about. It's the next logical step for a more comprehensive service portfolio to be able to respond to it. Instead of listening to complaints of diabetes, coronary artery disease, screening for high blood pressure, having a woman who gets pregnant and has a baby, we can now access family planning services, two from a different vantage point from their HIV/AIDS platform. All of these expansion of service capability is really something that we believe is the first step toward putting a basement of healthcare capability out there for the planet, a move toward the first discussions of really making healthcare available more broadly in settings that really do not have a chance at establishing that capability from their country's resource portfolio and perspective. Will now move into that. The other central theme of being women-centered will continue in GHI and be a central piece of it, but the country ownership is, I believe, as in PEPFAR, the new kind of next 5 years of PEPFAR, is the critical element that will enable us to continue to save money by moving toward a more public sector, more indigenous NGO continuum of care and services that gets developed and will allow us to monitor this in a way that answers questions about operational research, relationships, implementation, the role of management, oversight, how monitoring and evaluation can actually in more real time correct and improve a program's ability to hit an impact. So all of those issues through the Global Health Initiative will continue. And we're very excited and happy that this administration has seen the wisdom in trying to expand our ability to respond to the totality of needs that we currently are already in front of. We, this approach with the Global Health Initiative being girl-centered is truly a guiding principle for both the PEPFAR and the GHI. Expanded integration of programs, improving monitoring and evaluation, and really trying to look at ways to focus on adolescent girls at in settings that include not only the health system sector, but also the education sector, and really try to be aggressive at bridging capabilities between those two sites. This is not a new focus for PEPFAR. PEPFAR has focused on women really from very early on. We have most of the patients that we have on antiretrovirals, 62% of them are women. That's 1.5 million plus. 10 million, 11 million have received testing, 7.5 of those in the context of prenatal. 509,800 identified positive women have received antiretroviral prof. In the last 9 months alone, we have prevented over 100,000 transmission, vertical transmission, on top of, in the prior 5-6 years, 240,000. So I say that to show you that in the last few months, year or so, we have intensified our maternal to child transmission system to be more effective and responsive to getting patients into care and in front of treatment. Strategic focus on 5 cross-cutting areas, increasing our gender equity and HIV/AIDS activities, including maternal and reproductive health systems, really trying to figure out the best way to incorporate and address male norms and behavior, reducing violence and coercion, the continuity of that messaging to figure out where in school, but also I think more importantly in the workplace, it's possible to actually bring peer mentoring dialogues in play for men that continue to impact them both in their early schooling, but also as they move into the workplace. And the structural issues around laws and institutions, workplace issues around gender, supporting women in inheritance and property ownership, a much more difficult lift requiring a dialogue with government that is sometimes a disconnect with where the culture, society sees this as urgent or not urgent. We have really taken an aggressive approach around MSM dialogues in communities and are seeing the need to do the same in gender by pushing this into our diplomatic dialogue. So there's the ambassador and diplomacy, then there's kind of programmatic resources that push governments into service constellations and behavior patterns. We have underutilized the diplomatic dialogue and have seen real utility in engaging the highest leadership in country around laws that discriminate and talking to them repeatedly in every dialogue, either our ambassadors when I visit or our in-country ambassador or when the deputy secretary or secretary visits the country, that it becomes a central theme in every dialogue that they engage in. We have seen it move things in a surprising way, although be it a little slower, but we believe it is a more durable and lasting intervention. This is just looking at the number of activities. It's a loose picture. They've gone up since 2006 with a steeper trajectory in 8. But it's just looking at the number of programs that PEPFAR has funded. It is a theme that started, as I say, earlier and will continue to increase over the next few years. So we have, in the initiatives coming to an end in 2010, a number of initiatives that were scheduled to end and are ending. Some of them are transforming into country-based activities that will continue. The gender-based violence initiative we will talk about in a second as something that we're increasing and expanding, kind of moving to scale in a number of countries that have unique needs, but virtually in every PEPFAR country, increasing our GBV coverage and service constellation. The new initiatives for new gender-based violence, which I'll talk about in a second, the Gender Challenge Fund and updated reproductive health family planning guidance are all part of what is coming in PEPFAR. The linkages to family planning and maternal and child health off of an HIV/AIDS platform, we are well along the way in being very concrete about how to guide our in-country teams to move in that direction. I'm going to spend a little time on this and then give you an opportunity to ask questions about it. I guess about 9 months ago, we decided that we really wanted to put some available resources toward expanding a capability, bringing to scale gender-based violence resources, kind of in all facets of it. Additional resources were identified to also strengthen our ability to do research in it and document it, to look at meaningful pilot methodologies that we've now taken out of pilot and are trying to move to scale, but to still see and take advantage of that dissemination, to still continue to learn from how that GBV activity relates to hospitals, emergency rooms, clinic settings, and actually just kind of walking in off the street. Where and how it relates to medical institutions in general that are not thinking of themselves as a gender-based violence service site, and how police and other social service entities actually access these services. Consultation held in May, many of you participated in that, was inspiring from my perspective to come in and give kind of an opening talk with Ambassador Verveer about the importance of these issues, but feeling the excitement in the room was very apparent to me that the moment had kind of come for this issue to get the legs it has deserved from the beginning to actually address this issue in a way that was not, again, another program that looked at starting four or five pilots. The Gender Challenge Fund, $8 million available to strengthen gender programming in line with our five key gender strategies. PEPFAR also is trying to create an incentive on part of our PEPFAR teams and country to match their resources that they already have budgeted as they are freed up as programs mature or close, that they move their already existing resources into a gender portfolio. Overall, the difficulty in engaging our multi-sectoral colleagues in something other than just talking about the need is something that this work in the last year has impressed upon me, that there aren't a lot of people, countries, bilateral, multilateral foundations out there other than Global Fund and PEPFAR who really have moved a program capability to scale in the way that really is not only needed but will actually be the conduit through which we see results. And I say that humbly, but this last 9 months has taught me that it really has fallen to the United States in a way that I had not appreciated before, getting kind of intimate with what is out there, who's doing it, and who can do it. And unfortunately, it has become apparent that we are in this unique position with our wealth and with our people, our brains, our willingness, our ambition to engage in what largely are problems that people feel are too unwieldy to engage with. We are out there largely alone in this effort, and it has been a real epiphany for me to realize that we need to change our internal dialogue to look for others to help. But the truth of it is, especially in this economic decline, for the next 2 years or so, it is largely going to be a U.S.-based response to most of the issues that we're talking about today and most of the issues in the Global Health Initiative, just because people are not positioned economically to play that support role. We are still aggressively engaging in a dialogue with all our bilateral friends and many of our foundation colleagues around it and trying to think how we can use the resources that are available in the best way to allow for them to be additive, for us to move toward scaling where we can, and most importantly, to change the way we talk to our partner governments about their role in moving these programs forward. It is no longer smart to just do a parallel system of care done by NGOs and that exclude the Ministry of Health, the public sector, and the private sector that are indigenous to the country in completing these continuums of care. The Global Health Initiative will start out with that in mind. And in having that total portfolio of expectation, USG funded starting to now blend more into public sector service sites. It's more sustainable, it's cheaper, it is truly expanding the capability of the countries that we've been working in now for 7 years, for the Global Fund for 10 years, and have systems of care that are so fragilely rooted, so superficially rooted, that as soon as the funding stops, they will, in many instances, disappear in the capability. So we have keenly identified that as something we need to think hard about, how to reposition ourselves. So I will stop there and allow questions to be thrown up.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Guzby. We really appreciate that overview of where you've come from and particularly where you're going, because I think this is an audience that is keenly aware of the challenges that you face in trying to move this forward and are very eager to begin to hear what are the next steps and how do we get concrete about this. So before I open it up to the floor for a couple of minutes of questions, let me just ask you to go a step further. You mentioned the links with the education sector. But can you talk a little bit more about how links with education and links with economic empowerment might move forward under the PEPFAR platform?
Well, we have intermittently in the PEPFAR activity targeted ministries of education as partners. It has mostly been in professional school development, but have not really had much activity in moving to elementary, secondary school in hygiene and health education around the specifics of HIV and other diseases, sexuality, how sexuality and kind of family planning issues for an age-appropriate discussion. And we see that as a forum where we can strengthen the teachers and the community that parents and teacher community, the larger school community, to use as a conduit through which both HIV-related messaging and health messaging and gender-based issue messaging can be taken advantage of. So we are trying to identify how that will actually meet the ground now from kind of on all three fronts, HIV as well as gender, as well as just other health issues in the gender and the global health initiative context. Early thinking on it, but we're finding real receptivity in many of the countries in which we had as kind of the early focus countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And there, with the whole MDG discussion going on in the larger global context, many of the countries' ministries of education are actually interested in talking now in a way that they apparently weren't before. So we're going to try to take full advantage of that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's open it up for a couple of questions. Please identify yourself when you get a mic, and there are some mics that will be floating around the room. And let's open it up. Over here.
Thank you very much indeed. I'm Dr. Jill Greer from IPPF, International Planned Parenthood Federation, and it's a great pleasure to be here. And I'd like to congratulate you very much indeed on the initiative and the president. I just find it very exciting to hear what is planned, and want to say that we have moved to integrate family planning, reproductive health, HIV prevention, treatment and care in 24 indigenous organizations in 24 countries with remarkable success and well-documented case studies and evidence about this. And I just wanted to ask and make a request, in a sense, which is, I noted your comment about NGOs and parallel systems, and I'm not sure, of course, how this has worked with PEPFAR, but these 24 indigenous NGOs, country-owned, led, governed, are there to work to complement government, not to work in parallel, but to support government, particularly in reaching those that governments cannot always reach, the poor, the marginalized, the vulnerable, and in particular the young. And they are part of those communities. And I just want to say that in the diplomacy and in the conversations with government leadership, I think there's a lot of evidence to show that NGOs, civil society, indigenous civil society, can complement government in many ways, particularly in this challenging area. And I would hope that, in spite of the fact that, you know, some 80 countries have passed laws against civil society in the last year, that the United States will continue to foster that complementarity. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Have seen the NGO community be oftentimes, especially for marginalized communities, the only conduit through which services can be realized. We continue to see that almost in the majority of the settings that PEPFAR currently is in, and especially in MSM, in women and gender issues, and in injection drug using populations. That sensitivity is very much part of how we think. I guess it may have sounded like I was overstating it. It's not just a government-focused deployment of our dialogue and our partnering expectation. It is civil society. And civil society to us includes the government in the sense that they are part of the government is charged with responding to the needs of the population. What I would say is that in the early PEPFAR, we were too focused on bringing NGOs that were excellent and had deep experience or garnished deep experience to immediately create a capability that was sophisticated and complicated in countries that did not have that capability. To the exclusion of working with what was there, both government, public sector, private sector, and civil society, and would bring in an entity from San Francisco or from Seattle, from Cambridge, from New York, to set up shop and start a capability there that had we done a hybrid of that, we would be in a very different spot now, in terms of really sustainable, durable services. We will always need an implementing component from an NGO who has that kind of excellence and depth. But we would like the NGOs that are based in San Francisco and Cambridge and New York to also have the ability to technical assistance, to mentor, to have those long relationships with entities in the country that truly expand their capability. So it's not an either or, it's a both. And being sensitive to that at the beginning of these extraordinary kind of deployments, I think is a unique feature that I'm finding we are introducing with this administration and how we kind of move forward. NGOs of all types will have more work to do if everything goes correct. And that's how we hope it will. But we just hope that TA piece begins to be part of their capability and their toolbox.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. My name is Mike Mbizo. I'm with WHO, Department of Reproductive Health and Research. I would really like to commend you for that vision. In particular, your focus in terms of for the girl child and making this a woman-centered initiative. If I reflect and look back during my time in school, at that time, the problem was parasitic infections. We learned about bilharzia, we learned about malaria, certainly we knew about cholera, and we knew about smallpox and where to get vaccinated. And this is something we could see, we're able to internalize to protect ourselves and able to go back and communicate to our parents, in fact, mobilize the village and community. So if one is able today to discuss and engage within the school system issues related to sexuality, to prevention of for HIV, unintended pregnancies, certainly that should have an impact if one is able to internalize the behaviors and be empowered to do that. The only thing which could be a gap may be to say with that sexuality education, and in fact I'm very pleased that PAPFAR is openly talking about this. We have talked about it in WHO, but we don't have the resources you have, so there could be possibilities of dialogue. At times, to link it to post-exposure prophylaxis and emergency contraception, or just to say the services are going to be available for that where some of this protection has not worked. I was very disheartened, for instance, during the Women Deliver to hear of a report in Malawi where up to 56 girls were thrown out of school because of pregnancy. And to also hear, for instance, Limpopo-Zimbabwe border, that many of the young refugees who present are victims of rape. And when they go for counseling, nearly 50% of them have got young babies or are pregnant out of rape. And so if it's that possibility of linking this empowerment, this schooling system, with the options where there is a functioning referral system for addressing the emergencies that the young girls may be exposed to. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with your hope, and it is our intent to try to look at not just having one or two pilot sites that do indeed take rape victims or post-exposure victims, but indeed make available sexually transmitted disease testing, pregnancy testing, and post-exposure prophylaxis with antiretrovirals would be the routine package matched with social service counseling and kind of longer-term follow-up. HIV testing would be part of that, but HIV testing follow-up would also be part of that. So we're really trying to link it to something that may immediately meet the woman in the acute care setting, but follow her back into her regular life so that there's continued opportunity to access services. It's tricky. Most women are not interested in revealing themselves in and around the rape event. But trying to create sensitive strategies that do identify multiple opportunities to capture her in a counseling and service relationship is the trick. And so I appreciate what you're saying with that.
Do you have time for one last question?
Sure.
Okay.
Good morning, Ambassador Goosby. My name is Gail Goodridge, and I'm with FHI. Mm-hmm. I've just returned from spending the last 5 years based in East and Central Africa working on a program called RODES that is looking at the, as well as a very strong health approach, also looking at the economic, social, and cultural barriers that prevent women accessing services. And so I'm just so delighted to see, you know, just the broadening of PEPFAR and focusing more on these issues. But I was just wondering if you could take a second to get a chance to answer Janet's second part of her question, which dealt with economic strengthening, and particularly how we might look at that as it relates to access to women and girls. I'm thinking particularly not only on the prevention side, and risk behaviors that are as a result of economic vulnerability. But I'm also thinking on the treatment side. I know in the HIV/AIDS implementers meetings over the last few years in Africa that two of the major reasons why people are lost to follow-up is that they can't afford the food, that they need to stay on treatment, and they can't afford to get to the clinic. So, and we know that that's particularly an issue for women. So I'm wondering if you could just address that economic vulnerability mm-hmm. issue a little bit. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a real vulnerability. There are a lot of social norms and laws that diminish a woman's ability to establish independence with the death of her spouse, husband, especially, and the way the resource moves through the family post-death really puts her at an extraordinary disadvantage. I've had a number of conversations myself with legislative leadership as well as kind of presidents and who get it on one level but aren't about to pick it up because it's politically not to their advantage to try to change what is an often deeply rooted custom, like thousands of years kind of thing. But they do intellectually see the disproportionate impact, the unfairness of it, and the scramble for stability, safety, on an economic level, on shelter, on a food level, that frequently presents itself to the woman who's widowed. And I don't pretend to have a clear picture of how we can best do this that's not kind of an iterative over time. I think by example, by bringing it forward, it'll help. But I think the more effective strategy is to educate women and get them the motor that they can use that education as a motor to access stability, economic stability, microfinancing as the complement to that, loans as a complement to that that are targeting women are much more effective at actually benefiting the family and the society around them, the community around them, than targeting men. All of those strategies are well known to us at this point. We, especially in the Global Health Initiative, are trying to converge a strong development, education, microfinancing component that goes everywhere we're going with medical services. PEPFAR will be a little slower in picking that up, is my guess. We are large platforms, but getting the kind of development toolbox to converge on it seems to be harder than I thought it would have been, and I'm not I don't fully understand why it's hard to pull our kind of colleagues into supporting this effort. I get that we're there and we're asking them to come where we are, but we're also trying to help facilitate it both with resources and making it as easy as we can for them or for them to kind of teach us how to do it in these settings. So we're on it, but I wouldn't want to give you the impression that we figured it out yet. But we definitely see that we need to go there.
Thank you for your questions. Thank you. Please join me in thanking Ambassador Goosby for his wonderful remarks.
Thank you.